Walmart. They're finding tracks and stuff from your cousins and your friends and your allies. And we gotta get you out of here before these crazy torch-wielding bastards find out you still exist.
Rashi, what's going on?
We're shoving Hobart in the Jeep and taking him somewhere safe.
Oh, you heard of the reports that they've rediscovered the Tasmanian tiger. You think they may be coming here.
Yeah, I don't want him. He's my pet.
Well, okay, Rashi, drive safely. Drive fast, drive far, but save Hobart.
Hey, have you ever been to Sonic Hobart? I think you're really going to like a lime slushy.
Hi, this is Paul Dini, and I think I'm pretty solo tonight. Everybody else is off on other projects. I'm here with Ezra, and I've got Deuce snoozing on my knee here.
Oh, he's sawing logs tonight.
Sawing logs. Man, he is just, he's just going after it. Muggsy's passed out on the rug.
Yeah.
And Hobart is off hiding somewhere because this is sort of interesting news. There is a huge safari taking place for the last of the Tasmanian tigers. And this was just announced in the newspaper. I've known this was happening for a while. And it just now made the mainstream newspapers, and it was on AOL's front page.
You're trying to keep it from him hiding all the other papers.
Yeah, you know, so Hobart's hiding out. He doesn't want to be seen, so he may show up a little bit later. But Rashi has taken Hobart down to their secret hiding place, and I don't exactly know where that is. But the two of them and Super Rika had it out a while back, and they're hiding him until the heat blows over, as Rashi said. So, but it is sort of interesting that there is this big expedition going in Tasmania, because a lot of people had given up hope for the tiger. But apparently just recently there was enough evidence of fecal excrement that they've identified as Tasmanian tiger. And
fresh, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I imagine. And sightings by people who just keep seeing them. And they keep seeing them in this one area. And they say, we see them all the time. And these are like backwoods people with no axe to grind.
Yeah.
With no stake in this. And in some cases, they're people who are so far removed from the rest of the civilization on Tasmania or another part of Australia that it's like, oh, the tiger? Yeah, we see him every once in a while.
They don't even know he was extinct.
No, I mean, the tiger's just part of the landscape. It's like, you know, occasionally, like, you're driving home and a coyote runs across the road. Oh, yeah, we saw a coyote coming through Griffith Park the other night. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're seen that frequently, but they're certainly seen more and more over the years that if there was an isolated breeding population in a certain area, especially an isolated part of the western part of Tasmania, which seems to be the most likely place for them, that as those animals grow and start competing for space, one or two might be forced out into the other areas, and that could account for the sighting, you know, as they go off on their own.
Yeah.
They're a solitary animal, from what I understand, and other than small hunting groups, they don't stay together, you know, in like huge packs like wolves. In fact, I think what they probably do is they probably, you know, stake out a mob of kangaroos or wallabies and just follow them around. And as the kangaroos, the macropods feed in different parts of the island, the wolf probably, you know, migrates with them on the proximity and picks off the young or the weak or whenever it can get a meal. And I think that also accounts why they're not seen regularly. I think they just tend to follow the prey around.
Okay, you know? Yeah.
They're kind of a stalk predator. Bushmen would say they would tend to follow after wallabies and kangaroos, and when they got exhausted, then they would run forward and kill them. And despite their big gaping jaws, their jaws were found recently to not be all that strong. Certainly nothing like a Tasmanian devil, which exerts a tremendous amount of crushing power.
Yeah.
The thylacine was more suited for, you know, grabbing an animal in its fleshy underparts, like the belly or the crotch area, and hanging on there. And that would be the area that they would eat first. It's interesting. So we'll see what happens from that. It could be a big hue and cry and a few sightings and footprints and then nothing, or maybe somebody will get a good photograph. I just hope there's, the word now is there's supposedly enough of them, there could be a viable breeding population. So
that's some possible good news, especially with the whole rhino bad news this week.
Yeah, the western black rhino is now extinct. Yeah, that's terrible.
It is.
Now, I stress that the African black rhino is still in existence, and that's healthy and hardy. Actually, not all that in great shape, you know, overall, but losing the western black rhino is like losing the... That would be like losing the Idaho grizzly bear or something like that.
Yeah.
Or the... Well, actually, in the early 60s, the Mexican grizzly bear became extinct.
Okay.
And that was the last type of grizzly in the Southwest.
Uh-huh.
So there may be a few scattered here and there around Colorado. No one's really sure. But the grizzly bear still exists. And if you go to Canada, there's like 40,000 of them running around the tundra up there. But... to lose a subspecies of the rhino, because every subspecies is a little bit different.
Yeah.
It's so if you go to a zoo and you see a black rhino and you say, I thought they were extinct, it's like, well, that might be a northern black rhino or a southern black rhino or a central black rhino or something.
And extinction doesn't mean like they're all absolutely wiped out. It just means they're so decimated that they probably can't sustain a population.
Yeah, I mean, I think in this case that all the rhinos from this area have been wiped out, and they've been wiped out deliberately by poachers, which is very sad because poachers just wiped out the last of the Vietnamese rhinos, and that was a distinctive species. That was actually related to the Javan rhino, and there are only a handful of Javan rhinos. So the Javan rhino will probably be extinct within a year or two, and that is a great tragedy because that is a distinct, different form of rhinoceros. There's the black rhino, which has the two long horns, the white rhino, which has two chunkier horns, and it's not really white colored, it's more of a gray color, but it has a wide lip, whereas the black rhino is hooked, and it's actually a corruption of wide instead of white. That's where that name comes from. Then there's the Sumatran rhino, which is small and hairy, and the Javan rhino, which is like the Indian one-horned rhino, which has plates. So they're all...
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they're all kind of knocking on death's door, but, you know, it's like there's all this misinformation around about how parts of the animal are good for healing and for health and for... you know, sexual potency and everything. And that's what drives these animals to extinction. That's why people
they just
want
grind up the horn.
Tigers, you know.
And inhale it.
Yeah. And it's like, what do you want? You know, your country is overrun anyway. You want more people there? I mean, come on, man. Look at the rhino. How beautiful is that thing? You know, it takes a female rhino almost 2 years to have a baby. You want to have sexual potency like that? Come on, man. You know, rhinos don't do it all that often. We do it like once or twice a year. I mean, that's what you're aiming for here.
Yeah, just use horse hooves. There's plenty of horses around.
there's medical things. I mean, there's Viagra. I mean, you know, it's like get some Viagra, some Cialis, some you know. You know, there's all sorts of stuff you can use if you want to do that, and the rhino is healthy. But no,
commercials aren't as popular. Bob uses white rhino horn.
Yeah, I know, but they're all, you know, they're lies. They don't work. No. They don't work. And neither does tiger blood or tiger wine, for that matter. You know, there is actually a winery in China where they make tiger wine.
Really?
They take dead tigers and they throw it in a vat.
Gosh.
And they distill it down into this dead tiger wine. I swear to God. All right, now the tiger, you know, the Indo-Chinese tiger's population is under 10, you know, and the Bengal tiger population is like 3,000 maybe, Siberians like 400, Sumatran tiger, again, about 500, so we're talking maybe 5,000 wild tigers anywhere.
Yeah.
Now, that said, there are a lot of tigers around because they breed really readily, and so they're in zoos and private, you know, circuses and there's actually tiger farms in China where they have lots of tigers, but they're all in tiny little cages. I mean, you think veal has it bad. I mean, this is terrible, but you have like a big, huge animal in tiny cages and they raise them to be harvested for their claws and teeth and skin. And the ones that don't make it, I mean, you know, they're all killed, but the ones who are sickly get thrown in or do die, you know, for whatever reason, they're thrown in a big vat and they make tiger wine out of it. I mean, what a horrible thing. I mean, it's like, it tastes like giant cat wine.
That can't be good.
Okay, well, regular wine doesn't taste all that good. You know, every once in a while, you'll have a nice bottle of wine. It was a lovely Chardonnay, you know, but it was a lovely Merlot. And the fact of the matter is, it tastes kind of awful. You know, it's like, but people pretend. So, Tiger wine, it can't be good. I mean, it kind of galls me that these things, that animal populations are decimated for, you know, first off, for skins, you know, there was that whole thing. And then for things that don't even work. At least if you're wearing an animal skin, like you get a reindeer hide or a bear skin, it keeps you warm. Yeah. You know, there is no myth that if you take the furry hide of an animal, like a buffalo, and you make a robe out of it, it will keep you warm. But if you grind up rhino and you drink it, rhino horn, it will not make you, you know, long and firm like a rhino. It'll just sit in your stomach and probably make you sick.
Yeah.
So better to just leave these things alone and try and leave some space for them to live in. That's what I says. So if the tiger shows up, great. If not, well, you know, we have our memories. Mm. So, and we still have Hobart in a secret hiding place, wherever that is. So
yeah,
I think they're just out in the car.
Oh,
I think, well, that's not good. I think they're just sitting in the car with the engine off, and they're all wearing Groucho Marx glasses, you know, trying not to be seen. Yeah. Okay. Oh, they've got comic books.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of comic books, I was on Kevin Smith's podcast a couple of weeks ago, and that was a lot of fun. I've been doing Kevin's podcast on Fat Man on Batman.
Speaking of comics, I'm really interested to see the 75th anniversary Batman issue, right? That's the anniversary issue you're doing?
Oh, that's next year, and I'm not doing it.
Oh, okay. I thought I heard an announcement recently where it's like everybody's on it.
I hadn't. You know, here's the deal. I was asked, and I discovered I couldn't do it.
Oh,
I have an exclusive with some other fine people that keeps me busy, and it sort of ties me up as far as that sort of writing goes. There are certain outs for it. There are a couple of things that I have in the works that are I would say, more related to that kind of thing, but those were negotiated when my last deal was negotiated a year ago, so there are certain outs. This was something I was asked to do just recently. I talked to my old editor, we were all excited, and then it turns out I couldn't do it. But in between, that was around the time of the New York con, and word got out that I might be working on this, so
unfortunately, I just heard it last Saturday or Sunday on a podcast that the announcement and your name was listed amongst the names, so...
Unfortunately, yeah. I had to bow out. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff. I get offered a ton of really fun stuff, even for the folks I'm working for now. They've been so generous and so nice, and they've offered me a lot of stuff, and it's just a matter of time more than anything. I just don't have time to do it all. And
so how is it on Batman? Get any good Superman-Batman spoilers yet?
Well, we both agree, Kevin and I both agree, that Ben's going to crush it as Batman.
Yeah.
And apparently, since I did the last one, Kevin has seen Ben in the outfit and says it looks really great.
Oh, really?
Okay. So I'm not sure if he's been on set and seen him firsthand or if he's seen a picture of him, but...
Well, I know Kevin got a lot of, like, special promo stuff, or he's going to be showing artwork for it for on one of his podcasts or something like that.
I don't know. I'll have to catch up with him. I'm supposed to go back and do it around Christmas time. Alan Burnett and I are going to do, a special Christmas Batman on Batman. And I know we did one part, now the second part's coming up. We had a lot of fun talking about kind of like what-ifing, like favorite Batman projects, and we kind of hit on this one idea, wouldn't it be cool to do it, and we started off on a tangent, and suddenly the fans heard about it, and they're roaring, like, got to do it! Got to do it! And so it's like, yeah, it would be fun to do that, so... But it would be fun to do lots of things.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, if opportunities come up, you know, that would, I would love to investigate them. But for the time being, I'm more than busy doing, you know, what I'm doing now. One of the things that I discussed on the podcast was the idea of we should start a Kickstarter to buy ourselves some Batmobiles. Because Hammacher Schlemmer, in their Christmas catalog, is putting out honest to God street legal Batmobiles.
Oh, wow. Every version or?
No, the classic 60s.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one we all want.
Yeah.
That Futura body and the two domes and everything. My suggestion was that, you know, they're $200,000 each, so we'd have to raise at least $400,000 plus tax on Kickstarter.
I think you and Kevin Smith could pull that together.
Well, a lot of people seem to think that we just have that money lying around.
Oh, maybe Kevin.
Oh, I don't know. Well, still. But my idea was that we would buy the, you know, that we'd raise at least $1 million, because I'm sure Muse wants one.
And, oh, yeah, true, yeah.
You know, and Harley's going to be driving soon, so got to get her one. Yeah. And
you can't just get her the Batgirl
Ralph
motorcycle.
Garman and Ming, and everybody over there is probably going to want one. You know, yeah. Jen's going to want one for running errands, you know. Yeah. So we're up to like $1.4 million in Batmobiles. And I don't think people... They seemed oddly cool toward funding that, you know. And I thought that we could do, like, make a movie like Gumball Rally, where a bunch of geeks all get in Batmobiles and race across the country. And
that'd be great.
Yeah, but I don't think that one's going to happen.
I'd
do it.
Yeah.
I'd do it, but, you know, we'd have to go pitch the idea and get somebody to
just film it. And then sell it.
Yeah.
You know, that's what Kickstarter is all about. You raise the money, you film it, and then see what you can do.
Well, everybody wants us to... Well, the thing was that once we started talking about this other idea, everybody said, screw the Batmobile. We're not going to... No, you dopes can buy your own Batmobiles. You know, screw that. We're not going to buy you a Batmobile. We will give Kickstarter to have you do this film project. And it's like, okay, well, it's nice knowing the money's out there, but I think the chances of us getting the rights are, you know... Slim and none, but who knows? Stranger things have happened. So, but you know, it was fun chit chatting with him again. You know, you can really tell when you've got like a like mind and a kindred spirit, because the ideas just come boom, 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 one right after another, and before you know it, it's you're having a good time. You put creative people in a room, the good ideas always flow. And that was fun. So, what else has been going on? What is this? It's November, right?
Yeah, somewhere in the middle of it, I think. In
the middle of November.
Yeah. Thanksgiving's fast approaching.
Yep. Pretty soon we'll be off to Detroit to see the Lions Thanksgiving game and have dinner with the family and knock around Detroit for. Well, I'm actually spending quite a lot of time in Detroit this fall. I'm off there. This weekend, in fact, to give a talk at the Detroit Institute of Art. I'm talking about superheroes and animation.
Nice.
My sister's doing a show called Watch Me Move. My sister, Jane Deaney, is a curator of American art at the DIA, and she brought this show from the Barbican in London, which is a show about animation, to Detroit, and apparently it got a phenomenal response, and it's just a big hit show. It's just the sort of show that they've needed at the museum for a while. And so she's bringing in various guests to talk about animation. And this week, it's going to be Alan Burnett and myself, my old partner from Warner Brothers. And he's going to come in and show things from Warner Brothers. And I've got a few things from Marvel that I'm going to show. And we're just going to talk and do kind of like a round robin of talking about the history of animation and how superheroes and action adventure has been portrayed in animation and... take questions and answers from the audience and probably just eat up the better part of an hour or two. You know, what we usually do, it's kind of like what we usually do at Comic-Con, except we're not promoting any one thing in particular. You know, we'll talk about anything people want to talk about, but usually in a situation like that, it's like we're not revealing secrets of the universe or anything. We come in talking about the process and how and what we do, and then we... Usually,
it's educational.
Yeah, we leave it open for the kids, you know, and usually it's like, well, my kid likes Iron Man, and how does he get a job writing Iron Man? So it's like, well, okay, well, that's a good thing to aspire to. Here's what you do, and so you give it some advice, and you hang out with him afterwards, and it's fun. It's fun doing it in a facility like that, and. Not that Comic-Cons aren't fun. It's just sort of fun to do it The big also, time.
Yeah, it's a bunch of these, and it's like sort of, you know, processed into it what it is. And, you know, the museum, it's more relaxed. It's more just focused on this itself.
Yeah, I think one of the things we're going to show is like an old a Fleischer Superman, and analyze that, and you know, that came from. And then,
what's your favorite episode of the Fleischer Superman?
Probably the Mechanical Monsters. I mean, I think that's probably the best one. The first one is pretty good with the scientist pulling the comet down out of the sky.
That's one of my favorites.
But the Mechanical Monsters, I mean, that could be a Lex Luthor cartoon. I mean, that was actually before they really created Lex Luthor, or before they really refined him into a villain, because Superman didn't have... Back in 1941 or 42, when those cartoons were made, he didn't really have a rogues gallery then. All the villains that were introduced were either killed off within the span of the adventure, or they were kind of lackluster mad scientists.
He didn't have kryptonite at that point yet, did he?
No, kryptonite was invented from
the radio show.
Yeah, they wanted to give the actor who played Superman some time off, so they had him exposed to kryptonite, and so he was weak and near death, and then the other actors took over and doubled for him, or else, where's Superman? Well, Superman lies near death. Jimmy Olsen and Lois Lane are uncovering clues, or something like that. Actually, I think that's how Batman got on the radio show, because Batman and Robin were on the radio show, and they said, well, we have the rights to Batman and Robin, so let's bring them in, and that way... you know, you could have a Batman adventure, and then the actor playing Superman could take a couple days off because suddenly it's the Batman show. And
did Batman have his own show, or was he just a guest on the Superman show?
He was just a guest on the Superman show, but it's sort of interesting, you know, talking about things we'd love to get, love to do one day. This was something I was campaigning a long time for at Warner's when I was there on staff, was to do like a week's worth of the long-lost Batman radio show. And really do it with music and effects and acting and use the actors from the animated series and do it with that old time feel and make it like The Shadow.
Oh, that would be so amazing.
And create, you know, like a title theme, you know, not a song like the 60s song, but, you know, like a distinctive opening like The Shadow or The Whistler or something really do it like... an old radio series, so instead of just being a guest star on Superman's show, it actually was The Adventures of Batman for the radio. And it was one of those ideas that everybody agreed was going to be a kick-ass idea and that it should happen. And, you know, I'd even talked to Chip Kidd about designing, like, a collector's box, you know, for the CD, and thought, oh, it would be so much fun. We'll bring in all the actors and have them pose in period costumes like they're really, you know, have Kevin and Mark and... Bob Hastings and everybody just sort of pose, you know, around, you know, in 1940s garb, you know, as if they're really, you know, reading the...
Yeah, with the old mics in front of them.
That would have been...
That's a dream job for me, too.
That would have been so much fun, but, and I think DC was for it, you know. It just came down to who's going to pay for it. And the more it kind of... snowballed within our minds, the more out of control it got, because it suddenly, it's an idea that should happen, but there was no way to make it happen, because, you know, they would have to make a separate deal for us to write it, and this was something I would have loved to have written myself, but, you know, it's like, well, it doesn't fall under the writing deal that we have for you, and we're not going to make a new one, and it's going to cost... For us to use the actors from the show, we're going to have to pay this amount of money, and it would be great. It would be a great thing to make happen, but it's too expensive, or it's too unwieldy to make happen within the country. We know how to set up a deal to happen to make the show, and I think DC had made deals to make books into tapes of some of their big events, like Kingdom Come. Which was similar, but you know they're
had one.
But they're not gonna. They weren't gonna hire the same actors from the TV shows to do those voices. So this would have been a wonderful thing as an extension of the show, the animated series, circa 1995, to do with that feel and with those people, but there was no way to make the dollars and cents about. There was no way to cross the streams, you know. Well, from, I mean,
even the end product is hard to pitch. Like,
yeah,
how do you sell a radio show in that market? Then it's easier now with podcasting and iTunes and all these digital media representations.
Well, even as a one-shot thing for collectors, I mean, I think it could have gone through DC Direct in some fashion or
That's
another,
true.
And it could have gotten out there. You could have gotten it in comic book stores as a novelty. But even now, I think that the CD is such a quaint thing that even if you brought it out on CD, you might as well be bringing it out on 8-track. You know, it's almost like that you put that in the stores and especially young fans looking at it and they go, a Batman rate? What's a radio show? What's a CD? You know, if this was like an MP they could download or something, you could get like an app.
That'd be great for now. Like,
have
it so like a comic series. Each issue in the series has one episode of the radio show, and it gives a download code.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Well, basically what I wanted to do was take, like, you know, the equivalent of, I guess that would have been an hour and 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So, 5 15-minute shows because Superman was 15 minutes.
Yeah, 15 minutes. Is
you know, the sign of the Joker. A mysterious voice cackles out of the radio. Tonight, the Joker will strike. Yeah, you know, and do it like that, and then have the Joker. You know, kind of adapt that very first Joker story, or do something like that from the comics, and then you know, just bring in you know Batman and or tell a detective story with him in it. It just, like I said, you know, it was an idea that everybody agreed on. Should happen, but can't happen because of the budget and the all the rights and everything. I had a very similar situation happen with the Looney Tunes direct to videos. The ones that came out with the Looney Tunes gold collection.
Oh yeah.
You know when they did those and occasionally the folks over at New Wave Video who did those compilations would ask me to come in and do a commentary and I'd be honored to do it because suddenly it's like me and it's Jerry Beck and it's, you know, Eric Goldberg and John Crisfalusi and people who have really been in the, you know, been in the business and who know the stuff.
Yeah, those were some great
talking, matches. Doing the commentaries and, you know, more often than not, I just wind up laughing at the cartoon, you know, so it's like I have nothing of value to say. But it was, they were fun to do and no one got paid for those, so we did them sort of for love of the game and because, again, we loved the old cartoons, and if we had an interesting fact, we'd share it. But the more they started doing those, the more they started talking about, could we add a little extra value to it? And at one point, New Wave said to me, we would love to do like an original short, and would you write it, a Bugs and Daffy short, you know, that we could add as a bonus feature for one of the Golden Collections. And it would involve them actually watching a cartoon. And I came up with this idea that I thought was kind of fun because they were doing Looney Tunes back in action around the same time, and I thought maybe we could kind of slide it under the door of the same thing, which would be basically them in a Bugs and Daffy in a live action studio. So you'd only have that one setting, and you could just animate them around in a live-action setting, watching one of the cartoons on a screen, and they would comment on it and do commentary. And then there was a little framing device involving them. And so I basically wrote a cartoon about the two of them watching a cartoon together. And New Wave loved it, and Warner Brothers loved it, and Warner's came back actually kind of glowing and said, this is gonna breathe a whole, you know, new life into these things, and this is wonderful and it's great, and we give permission for New Wave to animate it and do it. And I said, wait a minute, no, they're actually expecting you to animate it. And Warner said, you know how much money it's gonna cost to make a new live action animation short? You know, it's like, forget it, there's no,
wow,
you can't, no, this is not gonna happen. And then it's like, well, can we do it all animation? I mean, you know, that way, you know, we were hoping to tie it in with back in action. And they said, can it just be an animated, you know, one of them in an animated background, you know? They said, no, who's going to pay for that?
Yeah.
Warner said, most emphatically, they were not going to pay for that. And neither was the animation division. But it came down to, this is a great idea. This is something we want to see. but we're not going to put up the money to have it made. It finally got to a point where somebody said to me, okay, look, you know, do you think you could go to some of the actors we have who can recreate the voices and have them off screen watching the cartoon and them do the commentary as Bugs and Daffy watching the cartoon? And we can't pay them, of course, so they'd be doing it for love of the game, you know, and then we could do that as like commentary by Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck.
Yeah.
And I said, no, I won't even do that, you know, because you're asking me to go out and ask actors to work for free, and I won't do that. And I really think it's a bad idea, you know, so it all fell through the cracks. It was one of those things that, and then I was watching a Family Guy commentary, and there's Seth MacFarlane doing all the voices, you know, it's Brian and Stewie watching a cartoon. And it's like he can get what he wants because, you know, it's like they're keeping him happy in there, and so it's, you know, that's... that opened some doorways, but so anyway, that's what was going on with that.
Radio show and all that happened.
Yeah,
I was really into radio when I was in high school and college. In fact, one of the first projects I did, I took Brian Michael Bendis's Sam and Twitch comic that he was writing at the time, and I turned that into a radio adaptation where I did all the voices and the sound effects.
Wow.
I've always wanted to get it to him and like to go, hey, look at what I made of your stuff.
Yeah.
But I never found the opportunity. But yeah, I just always thought radio was such a beautiful genre.
Yeah, I think it might be fun to recreate like an old radio show, do like a, you know, Jingle Bell type, you know, holiday show with and cast it with different people doing the characters and everything. And then it goes like, well, is that going to actually profit us or is that just going to make the 7 or 8 people out there who read Jingle Bell every year, you know? Happy, and I'm actually doing some new Jingle Bell strips with David Alvarez.
They'll
be going up on my website, and they're looking pretty good. So they're looking great. In fact, he's tremendous. Should have the first of those up next week.
Cool.
What else is going on? We had Thanksgiving. We had Halloween. Mm-hmm. That was fun.
Yeah, you guys just spent it at home, right?
Yeah, we spent it at home. There were our friend Eddie Gordetsky dropped over for a minute.
Okay.
In between taping sessions of Mom, his new CBS show.
Okay,
Our friend Ruth came over, and Trisha Lasky came over, and that was really it. And then we had, it was funny, for the last few years we've had big parties here, and we had a high striker, which is one of those ring the bell carnival things. You always see those in Popeye cartoons. He goes up to it, and he hits it with his fist, and it goes zink up. Bong hits the bell.
And they think it's about strength, but it's really just about the way you hit it.
Yeah, yeah. And we had one of those in our front yard we had one in our front room for over a year because we bought one of those for a party. And we bought it for a Halloween party where we had a Joker theme. So we had a girl dressed like Harley Quinn outside encouraging kids to, you know, try their strength. This year, and that was 2 years ago, this year we had a bunch of trick-or-treaters and a little boy comes in and he goes, Where's the ring the bell thing?
Oh.
And it's like, where's Harley Quinn?
Oh.
And he's like, he missed her last year because it was, you know, we had some witches outside doing it. Some pretty witches were showing the kids how to use the striker. But he came in and looked at Misty and said, where's Harley Quinn? Is she sick? Are you Harley Quinn? What happened to the bell? And it's like, we just did that to be fun. But then you realize, you know, when kids get to a certain age and they see something they think is really special, they remember it. It becomes part of their life, and they look forward to it year after year. Like
even if it only happened once, they still look for it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm that same way. Like there's my aunts in San Francisco lived on a street, and there were certain houses up. They lived in the Twin Peaks area of San Francisco. The houses are all kind of close together. But there were certain windows that were, you know, incredibly decorated. And I can still remember the blow mold figures of the Nativity in one house with an arched window. And then there was another window that had, like, animatronic versions of all the Looney Tunes characters in Santa hats and mechanical soldiers and a train. And I haven't seen those in years, but I still miss them. And some of them haven't been up in 20 years, you know. And I don't know what happened to the people who were in those homes. But you do remember colorful things like that. Yeah, and I think you remember them when they're associated with the holidays because you only see them that one time during the year and sometimes never again.
Yeah.
I do remember when my when my folks were together and I was in my teenage years, there was a family that used to have big, huge Christmas parties. They had this big baronial type house over in the Oakland Hills, and they'd have like a band playing, and we'd go on a Sunday morning not on Christmas Day, but usually the Sunday before Christmas. They had a huge open house, and it was big and fancy, and we did that maybe twice, and then I guess the family broke up or something, and never saw it again, never happened again. But I sure remember those times. So for the kid out there, I'm sorry. Maybe next year we'll have the High Striker back. I don't know about Harley Quinn, but I'm glad you at least have that memory. So we'll see you next year, kid. And I'm glad you had a good time. But that was our Halloween. What'd you do for Halloween? Anything fun?
No. It was a really quiet Halloween. Emily had a lot of work to do, and mm-hmm. I was exhausted from a long week. So yeah, we just spent it in. I pulled down the street and watched all the kids go trick or treating and mm-hmm. enjoyed that for a moment because we don't get to see that enough. It made me very much long to move out of an apartment where it's gated and move into a house where I can actually get kids to come trick or treat. I don't even care about like going out and trick or treating and dressing up. I'm at that age where I want a kid to come to my house so I can give him candy.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a strange life I've turned into.
Missy is joining us now. And
hello, everybody.
You know,
I feel better now. I was real cranky. I told Paul, do your own damn podcast.
Yeah.
You laugh like I'm kidding. That's exactly what I said.
Yeah.
That makes it funnier.
You know what?
I don't know about that, but I do feel better. I needed a couple minutes alone. I was.
One of the distressing things about Halloween is I never wanted to be this guy who asks the kid who they are, because and because I always hated that when I was a kid. You know, it's like, I'm Batman, ass. You haven't seen the TV show? Look at the cowl. There's a yellow circle.
Everybody was. There was nobody that came to the door that we did not identify.
I know, but then I find myself asking these things despite myself, like, oh, you're beautiful. Who are you supposed to be? Well,
oh, boy.
Yeah. But I was thinking, like, you know, this girl showed up and it's like, well, she's wearing a tiara. She's wearing a pink dress. You know it's Princess Aurora. She's got Princess Aurora written on her belly. Oh, and you are a prince. You know, it's like, why am I talking like this? I know it's Sleeping Beauty. I know it's damn Sleeping Beauty.
Because you're a grown-up and grown-ups ask rhetorical questions.
I know. No, they're asked retarded questions. And it's sort of like, remember, you were a kid once and you still have, and you know who all these characters are. So you can go at least say, oh, Your Highness, Princess Aurora, thank you for waking up and joining us.
I heard you tell the Harley Quinn story. We had so many Minnie Mouses.
Yeah.
And then we had this little boy dressed as Pikachu. No, he was an angry bird.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he was
that
the best.
Was what he was the little yellow. He was the yellow angry bird.
And you just wanted to pick him up and throw him.
No, he just came in.
Oh. He just walked
he
in.
He came. What? I opened the door a little bit. He pushed it open all the way. He came on in, gave me a big hug because I was dressed as a big fuzzy monster, raided our motherfucking trick-or-treat bowl, took everything he wanted, and took off.
And his mother was
he
like...
He said, bye, thank you. And his mother was on the curb going, no. Jeffrey, no, no, oh my God, Jeffrey, no.
At least she was there going,
oh, she was horrified.
Yeah, because
I thought it was hilarious.
I'd be more worried about the parent that's just standing there going, uh-huh.
Oh, no. No, she was mortified.
Jeffrey, bring the whole damn bowl.
Yeah, no, we had a big cauldron instead of a bowl by the door. It was huge. It was like a foot and a half or 2 feet tall.
Yeah. Big witch's cauldron, yeah.
And he could see right down into it. So he just got everything he wanted. Just grabbed a couple goodies, gave me a hug, and then took off.
Yeah.
Said bye-bye and took off. Yeah.
I like they just came in and gave you a hug because, oh, monster, hug.
Isn't that awesome?
Well, you had on these big...
I'm a stranger and he's just giving me loving, but I think that might have been his shtick. I think he might have gone to every house kind of disarmedly, like a good thief.
Yeah.
He disarms you.
Oh, my goodness.
Charming and disarming. Charmed and dangerous, that one. Little one. Yep.
Oh, that's what I'm going to do.
Well, he wasn't going to hug me. I was dressed like a vulture. So.
Well, you weren't No, you weren't. You always buy these plastic masks that you wear for 5 minutes and then take off when you fog up the inside.
I did. I fogged it up early.
Every year, you're like...
But I have to say, I did put up a good entrance to Sarcophagus Macabre, and then I...
For 5 minutes.
For 5 minutes,
yes,
and that's all
that.
I asked.
Yeah,
so next year...
I'm impressed with the way it looked. It looked really good.
Yeah, and I still have the beard next year. I'm going to go as Blackbeard.
Okay, you're going to light your face on fire?
I'm thinking about it.
All right.
But but Blackbeard's a good costume. I get a nice, loose-fitting pirate costume.
Uh-huh.
I can go all night in that sucker. Because all it is I'm not fogging up nothing.
I was like the year you wore the, what was it? You had no pants. Caveman.
Oh, that was a good year. Yeah. Tarzan, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great year when he doesn't have to wear pants.
Oh, I was a Scotsman the year before that.
And it was pantsless Halloween 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
I remember Chris Haston took your picture and it's like, oh, don't do that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. God,
that was... And then there was that year I was a pilgrim and I put a big scarlet A and he's like, he was like, what are you? I was like, Hester Prynne. He was like, I don't approve. I don't want. Take that A off and be a pilgrim.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. What was the other one? The little girl. Oh, the little girl that came to the door, and I said we had wax mustaches.
Oh, that was great.
Those away.
Yeah, those are awesome.
And I gave her a couple candies, and I liked her costume. And I said, let me give you something else. And I said, you want wax lips or a mustache? And she goes, a mustache. So I gave it to her, and she goes like this, facial hair, yes, and did a fist pump into the air.
Like success kid.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I love that little baby meme. He's one of my favorite memes ever. Oh man, success kid. The little tiny baby fist pumping. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did he tell you I got to do something super cool yesterday?
No.
No, I'd save that for you.
Oh, that's nice. Well, you wanted me to talk about it.
I did.
So
yeah.
I will. There's a YouTube channel called the Tommy Edison Experience. Oh, let's start over. All right, there we go. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah,
probably.
If you're telling a story, let's focus on you.
No problem. So there's a YouTube channel called the Tommy Edison Experience. Mm-hmm. And what it is Tommy Edison is a really nice guy, but he happens to be blind. And he does these shorts. He's partnered with a guy named Ben Churchill, who's his director and producer. They've been friends for like 20 years. And Ben just started like videotaping Tommy answering everyday questions. Like, how do you make sure your clothes match? And what do colors look like to you? And do you dream in color? And, you know, like, what do you see when you dream and stuff?
Fascinating.
Yeah. And he answers, and I'm not going to tell you what he said. You got to go watch his videos.
Yeah, I will.
But anyway, one of the videos that he answered a question, one of the questions that someone wrote in was, are there magic tricks for blind people? And his response was, no, I don't think so. I think magic is primarily a visual medium, and I love the idea of what Penn and Teller do. But if you sit next to me and say, Tommy, I'm going to disappear, and you don't move or make a sound, you're a great magician as far as I'm concerned, because I can't, you know, it's very funny. And he's very candid and very honest and just a super cool dude. Well, I wrote to Ben Churchill, and I said, I think Tommy's wrong. I think there are magic tricks that'll work for him. And Ben wrote me back and said, you're on, sister. And so he said, November 11th work for you? And I said, yeah. And he goes, do you think they'll let us shoot at the castle? So I started sending out some emails, and bam, it was approved. Not only did, I mean, they approved it. They did us a huge favor. They extended our shoot time because you're only supposed to get 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
Just courteous beyond courteous. It cost us nothing. I mean, it was just like crazy. And this was a decision by the entire board of trustees, the general manager of the castle, the entire castle events department. Like, all these people had to say yes, and they all did.
That's amazing.
So that was crazy.
Wow.
And it doesn't normally happen that way. You know,
no.
Like, there's location fees that have to be paid. The board of trustees decided to waive it, and they hardly ever do that. You know what I mean? Like, this is crazy. But they were like, this is worthwhile, and it's really neat.
That's special.
Oh, it was awesome. So he shows up yesterday. This is yesterday. Podcast last Monday. And so he came in, but before he came in, I was researching because I had a week. You know, like after going, oh, I think I got some tricks. He was like, okay, you're on. Well, now I've got 7 days, like less than 7 days. Mm. A, to make it happen, and B, to choose the effects and get it done. So I go down to the library, and the librarian, Lisa Cousins and Bill Goodwin, are Magic Castle librarians. And they said, have you contacted Chad Allen? He might be able to help you. And I said, who's that? And they said, he's a blind magician. And I thought, who better? Mm-hmm. And they said, you could maybe ask him if he knows anything. And I said, no, I'm going to ask him if he'd like to perform for a blind person is what I'm going to do.
Awesome.
I said, I have no ego. This is all about Tommy's experience. That's why I wrote this.
Yeah.
So Chad wrote me back instantly, and he was like, I would be honored. I didn't even know this guy existed. I didn't know his videos existed. This is crazy. It's awesome. You know, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So Chad and I put our heads together and happened to work really well together. He's a super nice guy. And came up with some stuff, and Tommy came into the castle yesterday, and mission accomplished. And there were a couple of really cool moments that happened. The first one, and they all have to do with Chad and Tommy, because it was like, who better to hone and refine a magical experience than someone who experiences it the same way?
Yeah.
You know? And one of the things that I said in the video was, Tommy is uniquely qualified to be a very accurate skeptic, because he's gonna feel any gimmick move, or if there's a sleight of hand or a shift in our body, he's going to be so in tune to that. We can't like pull a fast one by visually distracting him and going, oh, hey, look at this hand.
Yeah.
He's like, no, you know, like I can't see it.
Yeah.
So audio, you know, like if we use chemistry, he can smell it. If we do something he can hear, he's got the audio cues, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it was tough to choose some effects. They had to be instant, and they had to be in his hands the whole time. There was like a lot of criteria that had to be met in order to really convince him that these were good magic tricks. But going back, there were a couple of moments that were really arresting. And one of them was the first trick that we did that worked. Chad, we had this big rope escape, which we rehearsed and stuff, and we were ready to do it. And Chad said, you know what? Let's simplify this into a grandma's necklace, which is where you tie a rope around someone's neck and pull it tight, and it goes right through their neck.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You've seen it. I mean, anybody who's ever been around a magician, they've done it with a silk, they've done it with ropes, et cetera. And I said, you know what? Why don't you do that first? And if it doesn't hit, we'll do the big rope escape. And he goes, okay, let's do that. So he did it. And it was like the second or third, first trick, Tommy was polite. Oh, that was cool. Okay, that was cool. Second trick was a ring flight where he took a ring and made it appear and disappear. And it was a little sleight of hand. And then it appeared, finally, it disappeared out of his right hand and appeared on his left thumb under a hat. Crazy.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
that was cool. And then the third trick was a coin. So that was okay. It was pretty good. Then Chad did a coin trick, which worked pretty well for Tommy. And then he did the rope trick. And it was the first one that really hit him. And Tommy's face, it really was just full of honest wonder. It was connected and wonder and whoa. Like, it was what he said to me was, he said, I'm so used to being guided and being told in a safe way what I'm about to experience. You know, be careful, that's hot, or this and that. That deliberate, safe weirdness was a very odd sensation for him. You know, like, this is going to feel weird, and I'm not going to tell you what's going to happen. But you're safe. You know, so he was allowed. It was almost like going through a haunted house and saying they're not going to touch you, and then you believe them, because half the time they do touch you in a haunted house, even though they're not supposed to. But it was this genuine connection and this open, childlike whoa. And I got teary-eyed because I thought, it worked. Mission accomplished. We don't need to do anything else. We did it. I haven't even performed yet, and we did it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And I thought, I don't even need to get up there. I mean, they were very nice, and they let me anyway, and one of my tricks, like, slayed him. But still.
But the point is.
But the point is mission accomplished. That was the first one. Yeah.
Tell them
about
the
reason that we brought him here. And then the other one, there was another moment where there are three, and I'm trying to, because the last one was the tour.
Yeah,
but there was, and that's the one that was really remarkable. But I'm trying to remember, I sent a magician named Michael Weber an email, and there was a second moment where I was, this one. Chad is a really good card manipulator. Okay. And this is something that I wouldn't even have thought of sharing with Tommy, because I can manipulate cards, but it's not my expertise and it's really not in my realm of interest. So it's not where I would naturally organically go. You know, like I brought a card trick and taught one to Tommy that he can do for sighted people, which is cool. But the idea of actually, you know, this is what a card fan feels like, and this is why it's hard to do. And here's a card appearing. There's nothing in my hand. It just appeared out of thin air, and you felt it appear up there, you know, and like, here's a double fan, and here's a five-way cut. And Chad was sharing with him that stuff, and Tommy had his hands on Chad's hands the whole time, feeling, and he's like, how do you even make your pinky do that, and how do you do this? And there really was that genuine appreciation for the movements that Chad's hands were making, which was cool. But the one that really got me was at the end of the day, Ben, his producer and director and editor, he does everything. He's a documentarian. He actually sent me a link to a mental illness documentary that he did that I'm very excited with one of the Sopranos actors.
Oh, wow.
That I haven't seen yet. I'm gonna bring it up after we're done here today. Yeah. But I took Ben around the castle because he only saw the Peller, which is down in the basement on the, you know, like in the far corner of the castle. And it's a very small area of a very large building. And I said, let me take you on a tour, you know, around. And when we got back to the Peller to pick up the fellas and drive them home, I was going to drive Chad home. He was going to take Tommy out to dinner. They were gone. And I said, how do you lose two blind guys? And he goes, I don't know. He said, it would be easier for them to lose us, you know?
Yeah.
So it was kind of funny, you know, but it was kind of like, where'd they go? And we came out and I was like looking around, and one of the guys who works there said, you looking for Chad? And I said, yeah. And he said, he's down at the main bar. So we went down to the main bar and we just kind of stopped in the stairway and looked at each other for a minute, because when we got to the main bar, Chad was giving Tommy a touch tour of his castle. And he was walking him around and saying, this is what Harry Blackstone Sr. looked like,
because there's a bust of him right there.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
This is what you're touching right now is the bar from the movie Hello Dolly, and you can feel the angels, and here's this, and here's that, and these are W.C. Fields' actual pool balls, and you know, like the stuff that he got to touch, and he was showing Tommy where the textures are, and what's interesting to him, and he was giving a tour of his club to someone who saw it the way he saw it.
And you facilitated that.
And Ben kind of looked at me and he said, you did that. And I said, no, we did that. Yeah. I said, you contacted me back. Chad showed up. Tommy flew all the way out here. Tommy flew all the way out from Connecticut for this.
Connecticut?
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow.
Yeah. And then he drove down. Well, he didn't drive himself, obviously, but... You know. Hey, that's not right. He might be a very safe driver. But he came all the way from Venice because he's staying in Venice. So we went, he flew from Connecticut and got a ride, took a cabin from Venice to come to the castle yesterday. So it was all this craziness. And Ben was like, you facilitated this. And I said, no, we did this together. Yeah. So many people had to say yes to this.
Yeah, yeah.
But the fact that, and I said, you know, it's really interesting because for as great as the magic tricks went, the universe trumped us with some real magic. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, for as cool as Tommy thought it was, it kind of changed my life. You know, I mean, not only did it change the way it, I think the straitjacket was step one, but this experience for me as a magician was very solidifying because it was like, this is what magic actually is to me. It's the ability to share with someone something that they've never experienced before or to awaken a part of them that they didn't know they could feel. And it was so wonderful and such a privilege and a gift to just be involved with that and to have all those people say yes and to see those looks on his face and to just hear him say, this is something, I'm over 50 and this is something that has never been accessible to me.
Yeah.
Thank you. And at the end of the day, we came up with all these ideas for, you know, I said to Chad, I said, why, you know, like what kinds of things do you think? You know, because, and Chad said, and I'll tell you what Chad said after, because that was really overwhelming too. But we came up with these ideas. I said, Chad, would you consider doing a blindfolded docent tour? Like what you were giving Tommy? Like, because I would wear a blindfold and have Chad show me his castle.
Yeah.
That would be fascinating to me. And up here, you may have never seen this if you're a sighted person, but this swirl is from Charlie Chaplin's, you know, like whatever. This was donated. This stained glass window over here was donated by blah, blah, blah. This is a Lalique chandelier. It's worth $20,000 and was given to the castle by whatever. You know, like that kind of stuff. And give him keys. You can touch Houdini's straitjacket. You can, you know, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Fascinating. And he said, oh, I would love to. And then I'd love to do a show at the end of it. I would totally go on a blindfolded tour with magic by a blind guy at the end. I would totally do that. So we're going to pitch it to the castle trustees. And we also talked about putting Braille and three-dimensional art so that people could walk through the castle and the blind people will know, but you'll never know what it says unless someone blind is with you and giving them magic that they can do to you. Mm-hmm. And say, oh, hey, sighted person, watch this.
Yes.
See? Kind of cool.
And it totally flips the table. So, like, the blind person is...
The blind person has a secret.
...through their world instead of the other way around, which is 24-7 for them.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
And so what's kind of cool is, like, the blind person could do a magic trick that they can read how to do on the wall that you don't know how to do and do it to you. And all the skills and everything, you know, like all the information they need is right there.
Yeah.
And everything they need is in this blind box, you know, like in this blind person box. Or you'll find the box here. Be sure to return the items.
You know
what I'm saying? Like that kind of stuff. Or push this button and only blind people can do this gag. You know, like that. Because there's magic castles full of gags that you can pull on people. So I don't know if you know that. I'll take you through one time and play all the tricks on you.
Oh, yeah.
But there's I did a voice in the men's room when you pee in the men's room downstairs. At the front entrance, you hear my voice going, magicians with smaller wands have got to stand closer to the urinal. Like, and I'm making wiener jokes like that are all magic like stuff. And it's, you know, like that bad Carol Ann imitation.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the excuse box? That's in the men's room.
No.
There was a phone for a long time in the men's room.
Oh yes. It's back.
Oh, it is.
They just put it back. Yeah. And you call
and you punch in an excuse and it's like, You'll hear traffic, and then you call
say,
home.
Sorry,
and
go, honey, I'm stuck in traffic.
And it's like, no, you're at the Magic Castle in the men's room, pretending you're stuck in traffic. And you're having another bar.
the sound effects that awesome. You know, like the background noise to make, you know, like the excuse.
That to me is like real. I mean, it's to me, it's good old fashioned men's club humor, not dirty humor, but just
it's cute.
A time where, you know, men were kind of scallywags, you know,
okay,
I'm not going home just yet. Yeah, because
roguish,
I've got a meeting. I'm at the airport or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and everything like that.
But what was really cool is after, I mean, Tommy, my experiences with Tommy and all that stuff aside, I learned so much. And I got an email from Chad last night that said, I am so overwhelmed from having met you to having worked with you to have this happen all in a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't even know who each other were and we'd been through all of this together. And he said, I have never been respected by another magician and treated as an equal. I've always been almost patted on the head. You know, like you expected things of me and I showed up and it was just bam, you know, like you made no concessions. There was no, and I forgot he was blind.
And even,
I mean, it was like, I just forgot.
Due to the fact that he probably has a lot more knowledge than you.
Absolutely. He was in charge. He wrote the show order. He did, you know, like, and I let him do it all because he knew better than I did. I had no ego invested in this. This was all about someone else. And he said, because he is not connected to the Board of Trustees, and he's sort of felt, and he said, I really feel like, he said, I'm completely overwhelmed with gratitude at the opportunity to have been able to share my kind of magic with someone else who, quote unquote, sees it the way that I see it. And it was just
emotionally uplifting story I've ever heard.
It was awesome. Well, I can't wait to see it. It's going to be a couple months before they cut the
and
video.
It's going
to
be on his YouTube that he's been posting everything else on.
It's going to be on his Tommy
Everyone
Edison.
Everyone has to check this out.
Yeah, we'll keep you posted as when it's going
out. It was so cool. Yeah, it was so cool. It was just so fun, you know? And it was just like, and they're at the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences shooting something else today, and I don't know what he's doing over there. But he does this Twitter. He's got a Twitter handle called Blind Film Critic.
Nice.
And he sits and watches movies. Well, listens to movies.
Experiences movies.
Yeah, there you go. He experiences movies, and then he gives his criticism. And he's like, this is what I liked, this is what I didn't, this was loud, it kind of, you know, lost me here. And he's really candid, very, you know, congenial, and super honest. And what's super interesting is he made his living... I don't know what he's doing now, but forever, for a long time, he was a traffic reporter on the radio. And I said to him, how the hell did you know what traffic was? And he said, I got reports just like all the other people do, and I read them on the air in Braille. He reads Braille really well.
Yeah.
And so he would get them, and they would print, and nobody knew he was blind, and he was a radio personality.
Wow.
And interestingly enough, he's a huge fan of Billy West.
Oh,
and I
really?
Said, would you like to have dinner with Billy? And he was like, can you make that happen? And I said, I can do my best. And then, we're going to try to make, I don't know if it's going to happen this week while he's in town, because they're very busy, and I haven't even reached out to Billy yet, but I'm sure he'll be amenable, because he was so excited about what we were doing at the castle.
Mm-hmm.
We just had dinner with Billy the other day.
We had dinner with him last week,
And he seems like such a nice
guy.
He's amazing.
Great,
he's a super solid human being. He's just an amazing, solid, awesome individual.
Yeah.
He was just on Pens. He was carrying on about how he left Pens.
Oh, great.
But but Billy, I'd like to try to get Billy in to do a Voices one with Tommy. Because they were on the air at the same time. And they, you know, like Tommy is from Connecticut, New York. Billy's from Boston, and Tommy was in Boston. There's like all this stuff that they have in common. And I think that they would get along super duper well. And so it was really interesting. And at the end, interestingly enough, I do these neighborhood watch meetings in our neighborhood, because I left a neighborhood watch meeting once and they elected me the damn block captain.
That's a nice thing.
Because that's what you get when you leave the meeting. You come back and they're like, our fearless leader. I said, y'all are assholes. So, but anyway, I bought tickets to Teller's Play Dead. And we're supposed to have a meeting tomorrow night, so I bought tickets on accident for two nights in a row.
Oh.
And now I know why. Because I was able to give them to Tommy and Ben, and I was able to say, second half of this show is all in the dark, Tommy. You're going to love it. And he's a huge Penn and Teller fan.
Wow.
So they just flipped out. Because the tickets are pretty expensive. They're like 70 bucks a piece or something. So they just flipped out. They're going to the Geffen tomorrow night. They're going to be able to see the show. And it was just like, they were really overwhelmed.
Are you seeing the show Thursday night?
We are seeing the show Thursday night. Are you gone?
I'm gone Thursday.
Super. I'm going alone.
Can you take a friend?
I don't know if I can find someone. Scrounge somebody up.
Oh, you have two seats, huh?
I do.
But they're flying me to Detroit on Thursday.
I thought you were gone Friday. I asked you. when I booked these tickets, what you were doing November 14th, I said, I got us tickets, and you said, that's great, from the other room.
I must have blanked on it. I'm sorry. I mean, everything about the show in Detroit is just coming clear now, you know.
And, I understand. And so, it's okay. That's okay. Mm-hmm. I'll go see this haunted house show completely alone. Thanks, man.
Maybe Carol Ann would want to go.
Are you kidding me? What? Carol Ann would punch everybody around us.
What about Trisha Lasky?
I haven't asked anybody. I'll ask the girls, see right. if any of the girls
want to.
You know who might really want to go is Ruth.
Yeah.
I bet Ruth would really want to. I would like any of those women to go with me, but Trisha's already going with Sarah Ballantyne. Carol Ann, I don't think, would like it, but Ruth probably would, and she would probably enjoy it. So I'll reach out to Ruth and see. Reach out. Oh, I hate that saying, but anyway, I'll see if Ruth
would like to reach have. Out. I'm here to
reach out. Reach out is a new corporate thing.
I'm here to reach out to you.
Instead of like making contact, it's like the safe, instead of saying I'll call, email, text, whatever, it's reach out is that all-encompassed. I've reached out to Ben Roman, or I've reached out to Paul Dini. It's get a hold of is too many words. It's a very quick way of, you know, all-encompassing communication. Yeah. Reach out to so-and-so. And they say it a lot at the castle. So I get it in the email. You know, hi, reaching out for blah, blah. And I go, whoa, with the reaching out. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's just, it's such a, it's a corporate hipster sort of slang, trendy thing that's everybody's using it all the time.
And it's almost like, as odious as pick your brain. Hey, I just want to pick your brain.
See, that
about
doesn't bother me.
I hate that.
Well, there you go. Everybody's
like,
got their
thing.
Hey,
I wanna meet you for coffee and kind of pick your brain about how I get a job like yours. And it's like,
yeah, that's annoying because they want your job.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
unless you're a zombie, you know, you shouldn't be using the expression pick your brain.
Oh, so I should tell them about the sci-fi thing because it's kind of funny. And it's not violating an NDA. I don't care.
No.
Yeah. He's looking at me like, are you sure you want to? But I kind of do. So I was up for this show. I auditioned, and they got a show in development on Sci-Fi. I'm not going to say the name of it. But Bizarro and I went in and had a pretty good audition. And what the audition was, I don't know what the show is going to end up being because it sounds like it's changed formats over the course of development here. But what the show was, or what the audition was they gave you 4 everyday items and 5 minutes. And they at the audition, we got, for example, at our audition, I'll tell you what we got. We got a bottle of whiskey, a trumpet, a surfboard, and a coat hanger. And we were told to leave the room and come up with a full-on magic routine. Now, this is, as far as I'm concerned, this is what Bizarro and I were born to do.
Yeah.
Is improvise. A, I friggin' love improvising. Uh-huh. And B, with everyday items, make magic. Kind of where we're both Vikings. Bizarro, very much so with, you know, like with sleight of hand and stuff. But I always invent my stuff with everyday items because I think that's more magical. Turns out ghosts don't use tenyo gimmicks. You know what I mean? Like they don't go to the magic shop. They just don't. So we loved it and we did really, really well. You know, like we created an entire routine for them called The Trumpet Has Been Drinking, where we stood the surfboard upright and we painted it. And we did a levitation where we opened the bottle. I think it was scotch. It was either scotch or whiskey. Mm. And we tossed, it was a fancy decanter. And we tossed the lid inside the decanter, glass through glass. And then we took a couple of drops, put it on the trumpet, and put the bottle of whiskey on the top of the surfboard. And the trumpet levitated up the surfboard to get another drink. It was very cute.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was very fun. And you know, we created this trick. We didn't have to perform it. We just had to describe how we would do it, how we would build it, how long, what the budget would be. And we killed the audition. I mean, wow. We really did a good job. So I get a note from the show's creator that says, you were cut. You're not going to be on the show. We're getting ready. We're making a pilot. We don't have a series deal, but we decided we didn't, you know, like it, both, you know, the production company, Sci-Fi, and us, the show's creators, you've been cut. We're really sorry. You did a great job. It was nice to meet you. Very nice of him to let me know. I was bummed, but then I found out Bizarro had also been cut. And I said, that's kind of weird. What's going on? Because you need magic creators. Right? And now it's getting weird because I thought I did a really good job with magic. And then I'm finding out who's getting the jobs. It's these like 20-something college kids that don't necessarily have a lot of experience. Nice enough people, but it's kind of different than what they described the show was going to be.
Yeah.
So the guy calls me the other day. I get an email after being told that I was cut. I get an email from the production company that says, you're not going to be on the regular cast, but we would like it, if you would like, we'd like you to come in and compete against our regular magicians in the pilot. And I said, what does it pay? And he said, it'll pay $500 for the day, but if you beat our resident magicians, you'll get $10,000. And I said, who am I losing against? And he goes, oh, you might not lose. You come in and compete. And I said, let me explain something to you, sir. I said, I know how television works, and I know how budgets work. And if your finger's on the editing button, and you have a choice to pay me $500 or $10,000, you're going to pay me $500 and you're going to edit it, so that's justified. I said, furthermore, you've got resident magicians. They're not going to lose your pilot. That's not going to happen. And I said, so who am I losing against for $500? And he ran down the list, and I said, no, thank you. I'm not going to throw my cred to these people for $500. No, yeah. Thank you. And there's nothing wrong with these magicians, by the way. No, no, thank you. Yeah. No, thank you is all I'm saying. No,
yeah,
thank you.
You're looking out for your best interest.
Hello. Mm-hmm. And the guy goes, are you certain? And I said, rarely in my life am I ever this sure. And he said, okay. And then he was kind of pushing me. And I said, I'm going to need you to F off a little bit. It's like, we're done. Game over. I'm not coming in to lose your show. No, get another sucker on the horn. So Paul comes in and he goes, I think that end comment that you made might have been a little harsh. Mm-hmm. And I spun around in my chair and I said, here's what he offered me. And Paul said, nope, you're squared away. You handled that right. He just turned out and walked out because I was like, mm-hmm. I'm going to need you to F off a little bit. Except I said the F word.
Yeah.
And it was just like, no. And so I'm finding out who else is getting the show. And I was pretty devastated today. And then I came home and I saw some of the tweets that went to Tommy about the work that we did and how so many of my friends on Facebook are so inspired by what we did. And one of the photographers, the official photographer for both Magic Magazine and Genie Magazine, is Kari Hendler. And she's a magician herself. She used to work at Houdini's at Disneyland. She used to do close-up at Disneyland. Doesn't really perform anymore, but knows how to shoot magic really well. She came in for free just because she thought it sounded cool and took about 300 pictures yesterday and sent me one this morning, which is great. It's just great. Tommy's laughing, and I posted it on my Misty Lee page on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote this long paragraph about it was the most emotional, inspiring, and wonderful thing. One of the most emotional things she's ever shot in her entire magic career. And I thought, wow, my magic really affected people. So sci-fi can go to hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think your path lies along a different course.
It's just a different.
There is the glitzy reality show thing, but you are a reality unto yourself. And
well, I think that the magic that I create is very different than what they're trying to do over there.
Yeah.
You know, like I was talking to Kristen Gerhardt, who, you know, like I don't think I'm violating anything by telling, you know, people that this person is in talks to maybe do a show.
Mm-hmm.
And she's one of the people who's up for it. And she's a female magician I work with, and she's a 20-something underwear model. I mean, this is who they hired. All these people look like they're college age or just out of school. Yep. They're going to have them in the very hipster type clothing with the fan blowing on them, which qualifies them, of course, to do magic.
They're trying to make one of their own Chopped type shows or one of those.
Sort of.
You know.
Yeah, but it's going to be, you know, like it's under ostensibly a competition show. Mm-hmm. And yet the contract says they can hide cameras anywhere.
Yeah.
And use the footage however they want, and they can throw a wrench into the works. And even though there are judges on the show who make choices about who wins and who doesn't, it's ultimately the production company and the executive's choice who wins, and they're going to edit it as such. And I mean, that's all in the contract.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which I knew when the guy called me.
Yeah.
The guy didn't even argue with me.
No.
I was like, who am I losing against? And he was like, oh, no. I said, don't.
Yeah.
Let's not do this. who? And he runs down the list, and I was like, no, thank you. And they're, like I said, they're perfectly nice, and they're all fine, but I'm not going to lose to them on a reality show for $500.
Yeah.
And so, and it was really interesting talking to somebody else about it today, because they said, you know, they're going to have to hire consultants based on who they've hired. And I said, that is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
Let's have a magic competition show and bring in people who are not necessarily known for the type of competition that we're throwing them into. What? That's ridiculous. But it was, you know, I mean, it was very devastating. It was really disheartening. And then I came home and all of a sudden I got grateful for what I do have.
Yeah.
I've got a very exciting show coming up at the end of February in Santa Fe that I'm really looking forward to doing. It's only me. I'm going to be on a stage that Neil Gaiman and Amanda Palmer were just on a couple weeks ago, hired by the same guy, who I won't say until after the show is over, but it's crazy awesome, amazing. It's going to be 45 minutes of my show, and they're going to show a new movie about magic that just came out last year, and then they're going to have the guy who wrote The Prestige and the guy who wrote The Illusionist talk about magic. I think I'm okay.
Yeah.
I think I'm doing all right. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I'm very grateful. Yeah. And this is going to be in Santa Fe for, like, it's either a week or a weekend. I've got to get in touch with the fella's stage manager, and we got to solidify our dates really rock solid.
We still have to go down to Santa Fe and check out the theater.
Well, we don't have to, but, yeah, he's going to send me some pictures. And that's enough. Mm. You know, as long as I've got dimensions and photos and a stage plot, we're fine. But, I mean, it's like I'm very grateful for what's going on in my life. But it's crazy. I think I said this on here before. I'm sure I did. It's almost like someone you don't like is having a party. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't have gone to it anyway, but everyone else you know was invited, and you weren't. And it's like, you know, I would have liked to have declined the invitation. I wouldn't have gone, you know, so how important is the party really? But at the same time, there's a little bit of rejection. And it's like, oh, hey, I wasn't invited to the party. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. But in another aspect, I think you're very fortunate to have that knowledge and wherewithal to realize that this isn't for you. To realize when they made you that secondary offer that you shouldn't.
Oh, hell no.
Because there's so many people that would just because.
Well, and there are a lot of magicians that are. Yeah, there are a lot of magicians that are.
That's not necessarily something that you need.
Well, it's I don't think anybody really needs a reality show that's a competition. True. I mean, this is not a need. This is a want for people. Yeah. But at the same time, for me specifically, it was one of those situations where it's like, I don't think this is even a good idea at this point. You know, I mean, like that's it. And what was really interesting was the guy who contacted me about competing on the show had no idea I had done an on-camera audition, had no idea who I was, same production company, totally different dude. And when we had the auditions, I thought we did a great job. Kristen heard right away from the production company, you were great, so nice to meet you. I heard nothing. So I knew, even then. And what was really devastating was, and she corroborated this, like she said, yes, I heard the same thing. The reason I was judged against is my appearance. They don't like the way I look.
Yeah.
And she didn't get specific, but I know what the specifics are. I don't want to fight about it, and I want to see comments on Facebook either agreeing or disagreeing. Mm-hmm. But there were certain aspects of my appearance, and it's not my costume, it's me.
Yeah.
They did not think I was pretty enough, and they thought that I was too old to be on the cast. And I was like, wow, that's interesting. Kristen and I aren't all that far apart in age.
Yeah.
And so it was like, okay, that's interesting. And so what that tells me is this is really not, it's not my network. I shouldn't be pitching any kind of shows to them.
Nope.
And it's not my, you know, they're not my demographic.
This is a company that makes Sharknado.
Yeah, but I approve of Sharknado wholeheartedly. I mean, I endorse the Sharknado.
Yeah.
You know, but you get it. Yeah, you know, yeah. I mean, it's like, okay, so you guys are not my people. Dallas Travers is one of my acting coaches. She was, you know, and she's a very good acting and life coach, and that's kind of what she does. And both her and Jonathan Pendragon have given me two full out. Man, Deuce is just totally over this story.
Yeah,
he's like aggressively snoring through it.
All throughout the podcast, pretty steady.
Yeah, Z, 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 Z. Yeah. If this was a transcript, there'd be like, Misty, Deuce, you know, hysterical. But Dallas Travers gave me a couple of words of wisdom, which is not my people. That's okay. These are not my people because there are people who are my people.
Yeah.
For example, the gig that I got in Santa Fe is a result of Neil Gaiman introducing me to this guy.
Yeah.
And this guy that I'm talking about is no slouch. I just don't want to say it because I don't want some magician who lives out there to be like, oh, hey, I can do this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This is a big deal and it's a huge honor. And I'm really excited to be the first magician in this, you know, like this week of magic. This is kind of cool, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's that. And so they are my people.
Yes.
You know, all the people who came forward to express appreciation for the message of the straitjacket, those are my people.
Mm-hmm.
People that are going to chew me up and spit me out. This show, if they use up 8 magicians per show, or at least 4 new magicians, and then they keep the other 4 on staff, they're going to be back. There's only so many. Uh-huh. And then I'm going to be real expensive. Because they hurt my feelings twice. You know what I mean? So it's like, I'm very grateful for what I do have. And the opportunity like I had yesterday, you can't pay for that.
Yeah.
You know, like that doing magic for the blind and changing maybe, we haven't even pitched it yet, but maybe changing the castle's level of accessibility for the blind for the first time in the 50 years that it's existed.
Yeah,
I think I'd like to be involved in that kind of magic.
Yeah.
That's the contribution I want to make. I don't need to be on a magic competition show. Is it disappointing? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
But Paul made a good point, and he said, when you were just getting into magic, was your initial goal Like, oh gosh, I hope I make it far enough to compete on a reality show on Sci-Fi.
Yeah.
And he said, did you ever, was that really like, was it way up there, like someday? And I said, no, not really. And he goes, we gonna let this take over our life? And I said, no, not really. And he was like, uh-huh, okay. So it was, you know, like helping me get through the initial disappointment. It's getting replaced by real deep gratitude for the things that the universe has given me and only me. I didn't have to try out to do this blind guy thing.
Rashi and, you know, I don't know if you heard earlier, but the hunt for the Tasmanian tiger is on.
Uh-huh.
And Rashi is hiding Hobart from everybody who's looking for the Tasmanian tiger.
That's a good idea.
So they're hiding, secret hiding places out in the Jeep, and they're wearing Groucho glasses.
Do you know what?
What?
Someone was telling me that Lord Buckley, you know who that is?
Yeah.
I heard two stories about him this weekend.
Okay.
The first was about a magic trick that he did once. Would you like to hear what his magic trick was?
Yeah.
He had all the women in the audience bring their fur coats up on stage,
mm-hmm.
and he doused them in gasoline, lit them on fire, and disappeared out the back entrance, back exit.
That's the wildest, man.
Al Capone was in the audience.
Oh, dear.
Al Capone hunted him down for 2 years to shake his hand and tell him it was the funniest damn thing he had ever seen.
Really?
Swear to God, hand to sky. And I know this because Trish Alasky, I don't know if I'm telling tales out of school, but she dated Lord Buckley's grandson.
Oh, wow.
So she knows these firsthand. The other one, the reason that I bring this up is because of Rashi and Hobart's hiding place.
Yeah.
Lord Buckley once drove around all of Hollywood, California with all of his children, his wife, and a lion in his car.
And the point of the story is?
Free lion.
Oh, that's good. I mean, but that's such a Lord Buckley thing to do. He would do that.
Had a lion in his act, and they had to get it from point A to point B, so he put his kids and the lion in the car.
Now, if you don't know who Lord Buckley is, one, shame on you, and two, Lord Buckley was...
He's the guy that lit the fur coats on fire and drove around with a lion in his car.
He is the hipster to end all hipsters. He is the wildest, the coolest. He was a hipster before there were hipsters. He was just this wild comedian who did great... who had this great persona, kind of a beatnik, you know, strange, poetic, comedic persona. Guys just loved him. He was always in trouble with censors and everything. And he was just so freaking cool and so uninhibited with his act. And you can still find CDs of his routines or they're on, or you can download them. But by all means...
Or you can recreate them by lighting coats on fire.
And driving around with a lion in your car.
Right.
I mean, but... And for years, I knew of Lord Buckley through only one sort. He was this legend, but I was introduced to him early on because he was a voice on Beanie and Cecil.
Who was he?
He played Goman Van Gogh, the wild man of Wildsville.
That was Lord Buckley. I did not know that.
Yeah.
I love that character.
Goman Van Gogh is this crazy beatnik artist who's like a mixture of Van Gogh and Tarzan and beatniks. He wears a little blue loincloth, and he's always scoop bop ba doo dot and dee dot and wow, you know, I'm the wildest, the wild man of Wildsville. That was probably the best Beanie and Cecil cartoon.
I agree.
And he appeared in some of the bumpers. I think he only made that one cartoon and appeared in some of the interstitials and stuff because I think actually he died while they were in production. He died in the early 60s. And then they still brought the character back, but then Scatman Crothers did the voice. And Scatman's no slouch when it comes to doing the cool voices.
Yeah.
Did Hong Kong Phooey. He did Scat Cat for Disney. You know, he's great, great voice over a guy in his own right. But Lord Buckley was the original wild man.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of wild man, Mr. Deuce Marie is awake now, and he would like to thank you all for your kind wishes and tell you that he's feeling pretty well.
Yes, yes.
His hair is starting to grow back on his little patches where he had his spinal tap.
He's doing well. He's healthy.
He's doing good. He hasn't had a seizure in a long time.
Yeah.
And he's
now that you guys are finishing up, all stuff snoring.
Right? He snored the whole time, and now he's a little bit awake. Ridiculous. All right. Well, everybody, we hope you have a great, great week. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Thanks for dropping by, and we'll be back next week with more fun and frivolity.
Yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Are we going to do a turkey jukebox?
I think we may run an old one.
Oh.
Because we still have, we just finished up the Max Mavens, and so now it is Thanksgiving. So we'll probably run an old turkey jukebox, and... you know,
is bird is the word on our turkey jukebox?
No, but it should be.
Yeah, we should do a new turkey jukebox. I bet you we could find something.
We should just have Peter Griffin singing bird is the word throughout the whole thing.
Oh, terrible.
The surfing bird.
No.
Bird, bird, bird. Bird is a bird.
Terrible. And then the second half of it can be...
Ah.
Okay, I can't. can't take it anymore. We got to stop. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter at Radio Rashi or at Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends.